are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. It is Monday. It is a mailbag Monday here on the program. Brian Peacock, your host. I'm with you once again, taking you through, we're less than 3 weeks from the NFL draft now, and we'll be taking you through the draft into the offseason, through training camp, and all the way into the 2019 NFL season right here on Locked On 49ers. You can follow me on Twitter at BDPeacock. Email the show, LockedOn49ers@gmail.com, LockedOn49ers.com, and you can get Locked On 49ers on the brand new podcasting app Himalaya, as well as Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Had to get back to the mailbag today. I did not have a full mailbag episode last week. I was moving, had internet, didn't have internet access, so we're back to normal. All things good, setting up my new home studio at my new house and loving it, loving all the extra space now that I moved out of San Francisco, which was very difficult to do after 16 years that I lived in the city. But now I've got a suburban life going on. I got a baby boy and I've got some space and I've got some room to really build out an awesome home studio, which I'm super excited about. Not going to be done for a little bit on that, but it's sounding good and having fun putting that together and excited to continue bringing you guys this podcast. And I've got some other things up my sleeve that we'll be talking about and getting into. My guest tomorrow is Matt Williamson. He's the host of Locked On NFL, former writer at ESPN, former NFL scout. We're going to talk about the Niners, talk about the draft and all the rumors and the angles and things that are happening right now with the NFL draft, what's real, what's not, and talk about the upcoming NFL mock draft special happening on the network that Matt and I will be hosting next week on the Locked On NFL program. And yes, I still will be bringing you Locked On 49ers next week as well. Let's kick this thing off with True Tip on Twitter. He says, "Hey, BD Peacock, love your pod so much. Always wanted to send in a question." Well, thank you, True Tip, and you shouldn't have waited. You should always keep those questions coming to me on Twitter at BD Peacock. I always love hearing from you guys. And the question, like most, "I love the idea of Bosa falling to the Niners, but is there any part of you that worries that Murray might be that good and we are stuck facing Goff, Wilson, and someone that tough in Arizona twice a year?" Thanks for the question. And I don't think I'm worried that he could be that good, although that is a scenario that if he does hit and if he's a super stud quarterback, that's way more valuable than even what Nick Bosa would bring if he's a super stud edge rusher. So I understand where you're coming from with that question, but there's a lot of ways that could go south. I don't think he's a slam dunk quarterback prospect, and I don't think Cliff Kingsbury is a slam dunk head coach prospect for the NFL coming out of an air raid offense and didn't really do that well in college. So I don't think it's something that worries me, and I don't think the 49ers should be worried. I think it's a really good scenario for the 49ers if Nick Bosa is there for them at the number two overall pick. But I will say, if Nick Bosa does go number one, that would give the 49ers the opportunity to have potentially the best draft, like the draft with the most upside, but also a draft that could crash and burn and cause people to lose jobs. But it could be fun. It could be a fun scenario, and it could be a scenario where they could hit the home run and end up with a player even better than Nick Bosa. There are players in this draft that maybe have that higher potential, higher athletic upside than Nick Bosa if they meet that full potential. And then you're adding other draft picks on top of it. You're getting multiple picks, a couple of first rounders maybe in trade from a team coming down. So let's say if the 49ers do end up at number two, Kyler Murray is their guy. The Cardinals did not trade out and they did not draft Murray. They draft Nick Bosa at number one. You're sitting there and fielding offers. Maybe a team wants to come up for Quinnen Williams, because I think Quinnen Williams would obviously be my pick there if the 49ers can't trade out, and he might be the number one player on the board there, but I think you have to listen to offers just because the need's not there. Maybe a team wants to come up for Quinnen, or maybe a team wants to throw multiple first-round picks at you for Kyler Murray. You move down, maybe you end up with someone like Josh Allen or Brian Burns or DK Metcalf. There's a number of players that are super high upside talents in this draft, even though they don't have the high floor like Nick Bosa does, and those players could all easily bust as well. But that's the potential that you could have this amazing draft, hit a home run there with that pick, and have all these extra picks to work with as well. So that's potentially the best scenario for the 49ers if they do have that trade value. But I got to believe any team willing to trade up to number two would also be willing to trade up to number one. And if the Cardinals weren't really going to draft Kyler Murray, then they would be willing to trade out and they would get that trade value rather than the 49ers. So then the Niners are there sitting there with Nick Bosa again at number two. So I just really don't see much of a scenario that the 49ers aren't there with Nick Bosa at number two overall, because either the Cardinals trade out or the Cardinals take Kyler Murray, I think is the more likely two scenarios than they take Nick Bosa at number one and the 49ers are sitting there at number two. But that would be the potential highest upside scenario for the 49ers, even better than taking Nick Bosa at number two overall, even though he's my number one prospect in this draft for the Niners. Let's move on to Jeremy on Twitter. He says, Oakland calls, he's putting his John Lynch hat on here, Oakland calls and offers their number four overall pick and their second round pick, which is number 35 overall, one pick before the 49ers at number 36 in the second round. That for number two overall. Do you accept? Well, the first thing I would do is, for sure, 100%, I would counter with, okay, how about pick number four and pick number 24, which is the second of their first of their three first rounders for number two overall. And if they said yes to that, then I would happily make that trade if I'm the 49ers. And maybe you meet in the middle and you end up doing number four overall and number 27 overall for number two, which I think really matches up well with what the old Jimmy Johnson trade chart says for the 49ers. I think that second round pick is probably not quite enough to move up from four to two. But in certain scenarios, like the one I just laid out, maybe Nick Bosa goes one, maybe teams aren't all super interested in Kyler Murray, nobody's giving you a ton, I would maybe consider that if that was the best offer, number four and number 35. You could trade down again from number four, continue collecting picks, draft a player at four that's pretty good. So in the end, I think I could see a scenario accepting that, but I would definitely be asking for more, especially when you consider what the chart value is and what the value is most teams have used in the past. They would probably have to give at least another pick, maybe another pick in 2020 draft, along with that number 35 overall to move up to number four, even if they weren't willing to throw in number 24 or number 27 this year. All right, more mailbag. Let's keep this moving. We got a whole bunch to get to on today's show. Let's move along to N. Weston on Twitter. He said, you probably covered this, but if we trade out of number two, how high is Cleveland Farrell on your board? Number one, Quinnen Williams. Number two, Josh Allen. Number three, Cleveland Farrell? No, I don't think I would have Farrell number three at that point in a trade down scenario. I don't know if Cleveland Farrell is exactly what the 49ers need. I think for other teams, and if you just put a stock draft board and ranked guys, I think he would be higher in a certain tier. I wouldn't move tiers for him necessarily, but he'd be a little bit higher for a different team with different needs. And I think for the 49ers, he just lacks a little bit of explosiveness that I think the 49ers could really use on the outside. And you're right about Williams being number one after a trade down. I mean, Quinnen Williams and Nick Bosa, I think, are far and away the best prospects. I've talked about that a lot, and they're in their own tier. They're the top tier, and there's a nice gap after those guys for me. And then if you want to put Josh Allen in that next tier, I would get it. Cleveland Farrell would be okay if you had those guys in there. I might have Brian Burns ahead of both of them, even though Burns doesn't display a lot of power in his rush, which worries me a little bit. He does have a really good pass rush plan. He's got more of a refined pass rush, and he's crazy athletic and showing up at 6'5", 249 pounds and running his 4.53, and the way he moved in drills and even showed wide receiver-like hands. I mean, line this dude up a tight end, he could be a stud. Brian Burns, I really like what he could become in the NFL and his ability to get after the quarterback and have some range as well on defense. Probably be that guy that could play the Sam really well for the 49ers and then rush from the defensive end position on passing downs. DK Metcalf probably deserves some consideration. Ed Oliver, again, not a fit for what the 49ers need right now, but deserves a consideration there as well. And, you know, needs might not meet up with some other players there, but I don't think Farrell would be number three. And I'm still going to go back and do a little bit more work and finalize my board, because there's a lot of players in that second tier that if the 49ers did trade down, that I really want to have a solid ranking for those guys, and I'm still working through some of that And it's going to be tight. It's going to be a tight group of players in that next tier. But it's clearly Nick Bosa and Quinnen Williams in tier number one. And there's a nice gap after that. And one other interesting note with Cleveland Farrell is that he didn't run a 40 at the combine, talking about his explosiveness and how athletic he really is. And he's a technician, and he will continue coming all game long. And I love that. And he's really long, and he's powerful, and he's a pretty good pass rusher, and he's really good against the run as well. So a complete player. And I think he's a mid-first-round guy, might fall into the 20s, but he's definitely a first-round guy all day. But didn't run a 40 at the combine, has a little toe injury apparently. I don't know if he's trying to duck out of it, but he didn't run a 40 at his pro day. So no numbers there, and it makes you wonder, what's going on here? Is he trying to hide how bad his 40 might actually be? Even though it wouldn't matter if he runs 4.8s, 4.9s. He's the same type of player. He's a defensive end, put your hand in the dirt and go to work. And he's a well-rounded player. So I like him a lot. But he might have a little bit of a fall like someone like Derek Barnett did a couple of years ago as a defensive end, especially with this deep class. And it's sort of a pick-your-flavor class. There's some other more athletic players that could jump him, and in the end, Farrell might be a lot better player than some of those guys that leapfrogged him because of their athleticism over the course of their NFL careers. To James on Twitter, I thought this one was funny. It's not really a question, more of a statement. He said, offseason win, Fred Warner rocking number 54 and getting out of the 40s. So yeah, Fred Warner moving on from his number 48 jersey that he wore as a rookie. He will now be wearing a more linebackery number 54 jersey that has been left over from Cassius Marsh. And it looks like Pita Taumoipinu has moved from 55 to 50, opening up number 55 for free agent acquisition D Ford. So some numbers being moved around. And it looks like Adrian Colbert, I think I saw on Twitter where, because he went from 38 as a rookie to 27. 27 didn't really suit him well. He didn't play well and have a good year with 27. So he's going back to what he did well with number 38. So he's going back to that number 38 jersey, it looks like, for the 49ers. And Trent Taylor, if you've seen that one, has moved from 81 to number 15 now, which I think fits his slot personality a little bit better. 81 looked a little bit too big on his back, I think. Got an email from Papa Petrero. If you remember, he is the gentleman that we had a nice little bet about either a pizza or an Odell Beckham jersey, because he was convinced Odell Beckham was going to get traded for the 49ers. And he was close. Beckham did get traded, and the 49ers were the runner-up for the services of Odell Beckham, the New York Giants sending him to Cleveland instead. So shout out to Papa Petrero. That was a fun bet. And by the way, you don't have to give us that pizza. Just want to remind you of that. He said, I have a nerdy question about how trades go down in the NFL. When a team puts a player on the trading block, do you think they require offers to be in writing and legally binding? For example, when you make an offer on a house, if your offer is accepted by the seller, then the deal is done. Given how valuable these players' contracts are, which are way more expensive than most homes, by the way, you'd think GMs would want the offers they receive to be legally binding. That said, I have a feeling that's not how these things go down in reality, and I think it's wild, wild west. And these guys screw each other over with handshake deals all the time. I think you're right, Papa Petrero. I think these guys screw each other over all the time and lie to each other purposefully for their own gain sometimes. And no, I don't think their offers are legally binding. I think once they handshake, agree, and verbally agree, then they send the paperwork. And I don't know if they fax anymore these days. I know there's some GMs that definitely still fax. I just feel like they're like, yeah, they definitely fax. Or if it's just an email to the league office or whatever, and both GMs have to send an email, things get signed off by the owner, whatever it is. But I think there's just so many different ideas that get thrown around and talking about stuff that you can't possibly with every offer have something official there. So I don't think it really ever becomes official until both guys agree to it and they have those hands shook on a deal. But I could be wrong. That'd be interesting. That'd be a really fun thing to peel back the curtain on and watch two GMs split screen, talk on the phone, and watch how that deal goes down and how these guys negotiate. And I think we're getting close to seeing some things like that. I know they leave some things out in Hard Knocks, but that would be fun. And we do get to see a little bit of that in we have in the past on Hard Knocks and making some trades, but nothing major like that Odell Beckham, Cleveland Browns, New York Giants trade. That'd be awesome to see that whole thing and that whole conversation happen with the 49ers involved and how one team. And there was an article recently, I think it came down yesterday, actually, talking about that deal more in depth and how once the 49ers were really hot, and there was a lot of conversations going back between the 49ers and the New York Giants. And then John Dorsey, who's an old buddy of Dave Gettleman from the Giants, so those two GMs got together, and as soon as they started talking, Gettleman never called back the 49ers and tried to get anything better than the offer he ended up receiving from the Cleveland Browns, and he considered, he said he had to trade Odell for two first-round picks, and the 49ers weren't willing to give up DeForest Buckner or the number two overall pick, and it's a good thing they were not willing to give those things up, and they shouldn't have been, and the Giants didn't want to swap two for six, which the movement from six to two is worth a mid-first-round pick, which is what they ended up getting from the Cleveland Browns, and Jabril Peppers apparently was a big part of it because they considered Peppers as a second first-round pick in this, and I know Peppers was a first-round draft pick, but I don't consider him a first-round player right now in the NFL, so I don't know if Gettleman really ended up getting full value if he could have called around to some more teams and tried to get more than he got from Cleveland, but he looks like he just wanted, he was comfortable making deals with his old buddy John Dorsey. That's how it goes sometimes, so I wonder if how John Lynch feels about that. To Zach on Twitter, so we know the obvious trade talks about possibly trying to move on from Solly or Armstead, but give me an unforeseen trade scenario no one is talking about in the same vein as what we saw last year with moving on from Trent Brown for McGlinchey. Well, I think part of the reason it's unforeseen is because it's hard to predict something like that, so it's really hard to say. And I don't think there's anything I could think of that is that caliber of a trade where a player that you thought was a starter and locked in, that gets moved right before or right after the draft. I think it was agreed upon, obviously, before the draft, but they had to draft McGlinchey first for that trade that night to happen. But I think, if anything, maybe cornerback is the position we might see some movement that we never really saw coming or weren't really thinking about, like, say, a player – like Xavier Rhodes, for example, who apparently is unhappy or somebody's unhappy with him in Minnesota, who's a really good player, would be a fantastic fit with the 49ers. Maybe there's a deal that gets swung during draft day that involves picks or maybe some players, or maybe the 49ers move on from, say, Akella Witherspoon and say, okay, we want to solidify this position, trade Witherspoon and a draft pick or something like that, or maybe Armstead or Solomon Thomas are involved in some deals. But obviously that wouldn't be unforeseen, really, even though I don't know that any of those guys are actually on the move, but maybe bringing in someone like that, like Xavier Rhodes, and really solidifying a position with a slam dunk move, because, you know, John Lynch has not been afraid to try to make big moves, and he has made some big moves and missed out on some others, but he's been in on some big stuff, so I don't think they're done, and I would not be shocked at all if there was some sort of big trade, but part of it being unforeseen is that it's really hard to envision something coming out of left field like that. But if there is a deal, I'll say it's an addition of a big player that's still out there that hasn't really been talked about that much for the 49ers. Remember to get this show every day. Subscribe to Locked On 49ers on the new Himalaya podcast app. In an ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlists and new features every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On 49ers. Let's keep this mailbag rolling, knocking a bunch of them out today. I love it. Hey, Brian, if we have another losing year, do you think York starts looking for Lynch's replacement? I think Shanahan would survive, but Lynch has got to be on the hot seat after three losing seasons and not a lot of draft success outside of Kittle, Warner, and whoever we draft next. Thank you for the email. That was George on Twitter. I don't know. That's tough to say because I think they would still be okay through maybe half the year, and if it really looks terrible, it really seems like John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan are a group deal. And yes, I do think if one had to go over the other, if things were really bad, it would probably point to Lynch over Shanahan, just because Shanahan's just thought of as a little bit more of a darling around the NFL and a really good offensive coordinator and someone it would be tougher for the 49ers to lose, and it would really depend on if it looks like it's personnel versus scheme that's really hurting the 49ers. But I've said it before on the show, they really have an easy out. If the 49ers are bad halfway through the year, especially if it's bad on the defensive side of the ball at all, especially with the resources they're putting into the defense again this offseason, then I think Robert Saleh would be the obvious scapegoat and would definitely buy Lynch and Shanahan another year. But it just, to me, it seems like they're a package deal. And if it's really just not working, then I think you might have to start over. And year three of the year six contract, I know it's a six-year deal, but they were one and done with Chip Kelly, one and done before that with Jim Tomsula. 3 years is a long time, and it's tough for a fan base. It's tough for ownership to sit back and watch their team lose for three straight years, especially if it starts to look like maybe there's not a light at the end of the tunnel, which is probably what it would look like if the 49ers aren't winning again this year, because there's a lot of stuff in place and a lot more talent on this team than there was 2 years ago. And especially having the quarterback on board, and especially having the healthy quarterback all year, if there's not a big jump offensively and that's all not meshing well and obvious, then that might also still point to Kyle Shanahan, which would mean, yeah, it's a package deal. Shanahan and Lynch, they came in together. They'll probably got to leave together if that's the case. But I really don't think that's the direction next year is going to go. So let's get that negativity out of here. We're pre-draft. This is all positive stuff right now. Draft, that's what's great, because 32 teams are winners after the NFL draft. Well, for the most part, there are some teams that do get crushed by their fan base immediately on draft day. Let's see. Travis wants to know, does Nick Bosa fit best at big end? I don't know that he fits best at big end, but I think it's best not to think about the base defense as much anymore. Sub is the new base. Base is the new sub. So don't worry as much about who the big end is on base downs. Don't worry about the Leo so much on base downs. Don't worry so much about who's playing nose tackle or who's playing Sam, because those things have all changed once you're in your sub packages. Right now, first of all, think about, and I mean, you don't have to forget about those. It's still important. You're going to be in base as a football team. You're going to be in jumbo sometimes in the goal line. You need big people. So don't forget about it completely. But as far as pecking order goes, just think about sub first. Where's Nick Bosa? Nick Bosa is at one end. Doesn't matter if he's at left or right end, strong, weak side end, wherever he is. Nick Bosa is at one end. D Ford is at the other end, and those guys are going after the quarterback and doing their thing. And then on the inside, you've got obviously DeForest Buckner, and then a rotation with Solomon Thomas, Eric Armstead. That is an awesome front four. I mean, that is really good. And there's obviously, you know, I'm not even talking about Ronald Blair, and there's some other depth pieces here too. So those aren't the only guys there, but that is an awesome defensive front. And that's where it looks like John Lynch is trying to build this thing and just be a dynamic, monstrous, just evil, violent front four that destroys people both physically and with speed and with burst and power and everything, and overwhelms offenses. That's the idea, and I'm all for it. I think that would be fun for the 49ers front to look like that. And they've got some talent behind that front as well. But that's the best way to look at it. Now, in base, if you do draft Nick Bosa, to me, what you do is pretty simple. You have everybody else doing what they were already doing. You have three tech, you have DeForest Buckner. You have Jones, DJ Jones lined up at nose tackle. And at big end, you have Eric Armstead and Solomon Thomas, who kick inside on sub packages and on passing downs. And then you have, at your Leo spot, Nick Bosa is a really good run defender. You have him out there at the Leo spot. And then you have D Ford playing Sam linebacker. That's the way I would do it. I think it's the most obvious situation they have. The Sam linebacker is very similar in this defense to what a 3-4 outside linebacker would do, which is what D Ford has been doing his entire NFL career, and he's perfectly suited to do that. In fact, Mark Zacha last year playing Sam linebacker dropped into coverage less often than D Ford did with the Chiefs. So D Ford can do plenty of the things that you need to do in the base defense. Obviously, they want him to go after the quarterback as much as possible, but he's got some range out to the flats if he needs to go get a running back, and he can set the edge, and you would rather, and that's why I like him on the strong side, you would rather have him taking on a tight end rather than taking on an offensive tackle in the run game. So that's where I think this thing would go if they do draft Nick Bosa. That's the base defense. But what really matters is that sub package, those four down linemen. Bosa's on one end, D Ford's on the other end. They could both play both sides, move them around, confuse the defense, you know, hit them from all angles with those guys. That's what matters if the 49ers draft Nick Bosa. Let's end this with Lawrence. He wants to know what happened to Celek time. We know the emergence of Kittle made him a focal point, but I feel like Celek is underrated. Does he have a chance to come back to some of his 2017 flashes, or is he firmly our blocking tight end now? It would be great to have two pass-catching tight ends. Now, I think Celek was kind of always the blocking tight end. It was just that the 49ers' cupboard was bare. The 49ers gutted their roster. George Kittle was a rookie, so Celek was you know, the starter, because they didn't have much else. Once Kittle was ready and developed and healthy, he was the guy, and he was obviously going to be the guy. So I do think it's Celek is definitely that blocking tight end and the backup, the deep backup tight end. But he can do some things. We've seen him work in the red zone, and he has some size, and he's got some nice hands. He's not super athletic, but he can block, and he's a good backup tight end. I love Garrett Celek. There's no reason to push him out the door if you don't have to. I think the 49ers will bring in some competition maybe, and maybe they'll have a third tight end on the roster. But the 49ers don't need to run many guys out there at the tight end position if they have Kittle and Celek, and I think those guys are a good fit together. And I don't think we have seen the end of Celek time, no. Thank you for the question, Lawrence. Thank you, everybody who was involved with this mailbag segment. And to all the folks that I did not get to, I apologize. Still going to get to some on Wednesday with Nick. But keep those questions coming to me on Twitter, at BD Peacock. You can always email the show, LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. Be back tomorrow with Matt Williamson of Locked On NFL. And we're going to talk about our upcoming network mock draft special, talk Niners draft. Talk about all the angles that are going on and all the rumors flying around, what to believe and what is just part of lying season with the NFL draft. Talk to you then right here on Locked On 49ers. And remember, you can subscribe to this show on the new Himalaya podcast app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify.